walking through the long reeded grass. Everywhere is just a short walk from everywhere else. Things are about to start in about 10 minutes. Well, I'm looking forward to the start of the talks. I'm going to walk back into the conversations and give you the do back channel. I have seen so many familiar faces over the last day and a little bit. It is a little bit like coming home.
Hi, my name is Gav Thompson. I'm head of brand innovation at O2 in the UK. I see myself more as being the kind of corporate pirate within inside O2. O2 is a big organisation, does lots of good stuff, but like lots of big corporates, sometimes they need a few people on the inside to stir things up a bit. And my job is to work with the company on their strategy, on their ideas, on their products and services, on their brand, just to make them a little bit more interesting, disruptive, possibly challenging. I was here at the Do Lectures last year and got a bit of feeling that just because I work for corporate, that must mean I'm a wanker and what was I doing here? And so what I've been talking about today is using some examples as to why just because you work in a corporate doesn't mean you're a wanker, and actually you can do good things within a corporate that benefit the community and benefit society, and actually doing stuff on the inside can be a really powerful place to be. I've worked for O2 for 5 years, and prior to that I worked in advertising, worked for lots and lots of corporates. I've never met an evil person who works for corporate. So this kind of slightly exaggerated image of like Dr. Evil, they're all sitting around going, how can we screw more money out of our customers, or how can we stuff up the environment, how can we make things worse for the local community? In my experience, it's never been true, and it's quite the opposite. Everyone I've ever worked with at O2 and in other big organisations are fundamentally good people. They want to do good in their jobs. They want to feel the sense of they've achieved something during the day, not just earn money for themselves or for the shareholders. And they want to do right by the community and by, you know, the environment. And, you know, often it is the case that with a small change for what they're doing, they can make a big impact. Corporates have lots of resource, lots of clever people, lots of channels, lots of customers. And actually, customers want to do good as well. So if in the case of O2, you know, we run a thing called O2 Learn, which is encouraging teachers to upload their best lessons onto a website so that kids can get access to better quality of teaching, often that message comes through the customer. So the customers will say, I've heard of O2 Learn. They'll go and speak to their kids' teachers and go, will you put a lesson on? It's just getting all the assets in place and giving them a little bit of a nudge or a little bit of a tweak, and actually the corporate entity can be very quickly put to big, powerful force for good. What I spend my time doing is listening to customers, listening to non-customers, and trying to make our business more appealing for customers and non-customers. And that can be the angry ones and the kind of disinterested ones. I know there are similar people to me in every organisation who will listen to a customer. Corporates do often have a lot of stupid rules that they run by that have just been around for a long time. And sometimes you need somebody to go, why are we doing that? That's a stupid thing to do. And often people go, I don't know why we're doing it. We've always done it like that. And they're prepared to stop. Or you go, have we thought about doing it another way?
Were you this good at talking before you had your tongue rebuilt through cancer? Were you just using it more now? Yeah, you're really good at getting the point across.
I appreciate my tongue more. So I did have tongue cancer. I have had half my tongue removed. Half my tongue is now my arm. Or used to be my arm.
Yes.
Yeah, that would be weird.
You can't see me. Useful for something.
Yeah. It did have hairs on it at one point, which was very weird. But I appreciate it more. And I always like talking, but now every word has got to count. And there's a lot of them.
One of the most inspirational sentences I've heard, and that is, when I had cancer, that was quite mind-blowing for me. How nice that sounded in a way. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We are standing next to the fire pit and the wood store and what looks like a very large, empty hog roast. Who are you, sir?
I am Mark Koska. I run two organisations. One is commercial, called Star Syringe, and another one is not-for-profit, a charity called SafePoint. When I was 23 years old, in 1984, I came across a global problem, which was that syringes in the developing world were being reused a number of times and spreading viruses from patient to patient. Probably a fair proportion of hepatitis in the world is spread through these means, and a fair proportion of HIV as well. The results are that WHO claim that 1.3 million deaths occur because of this every year, which is twice as much as from malaria, so it's a pretty alarming statistic.
Is this due to access to clean equipment? Is this due to people trying to save money? Why are syringes being used so much?
Well, it's due to healthcare workers reusing them, and to try and sum up why they reuse them is very hard. But I can say that it ranges from we've told everyone to recycle everything in the world, but also to the fact that there aren't physical supplies enough for them to last. So if you've got 100 syringes in your store and 200 patients outside, what do you do? So obviously that's down to logistics planning, that particular issue. But there are now designs in the world, one of which is mine, which can be made on existing equipment for the same price, used in the same way, which is effectively a disposable syringe which can give an injection once only with no other detrimental aspects like cost. And my mission in the world between SafePoint and Star Syringe is to make sure that every injection given in the future is safe. The product invention was to design a valve so it's molded when the plunger is being molded, and when the product is used once fully, it then locks and destroys itself. You know, there are various drivers behind this, not only for the reuse, but also to try and stop the reuse. And I am just fed up with seeing the inequity of a patient being cheated, if you like, by a healthcare worker. Not deliberately. I cannot ever believe I've seen it deliberately, but I've seen it as a consequence of the environment and the situation that healthcare workers in the developing world are put.
I remember being on a train during my years of travelling and seeing the opposite of what you're talking about, a syringe, a brass syringe designed to be used many times and potentially, I guess, sterilised, but it was coming down the train, hitting the arms of people, one, two, one, two, one, two, across the carriage, getting closer to me before I realised what was going on. Yeah. I retrieved my yellow fever certificate from my passport wallet and showed it triumphantly, nervously, worryingly to the person who then passed me by. I mean, does this kind of stuff still happen today?
It definitely is, yeah. I mean, we've got undercover footage of syringes being used 40, 50 times. I'll give you an example. An East African country, won't say which one, has 42 million population, and they only bought 40 million syringes last year. Now, the average injection rate per person in this country is about 5. So they need 200 million. They bought 40. Ergo, what's going to happen? So what we're doing at SafePoint is we're now also innovating a new campaign, and the campaign starts at the top with the boss of the World Health Organization and saying to her the facts and the figures and getting a mandate put in place which then affects the products that the manufacturers use. It affects the funding because now the aid agencies are becoming aware from the top that they have to deliver their drugs much more ethically and efficiently, and therefore use this new generation of syringes which are called auto-disable or AD syringes. There are many designs out there, and that is the new generation, and that's what our innovation, if you like, on the campaign side is going to lead to.
Fantastic. Thank you very much indeed. And we're both sipping our tea.
I'm Ian Elliott from Poole in Dorset, here to revitalise some brain matter, as most of us are. I've had a long life in business, set up a brand, similar story to David.
That's David Hyatt, who runs the Do Lectures.
Yeah. Came out of that and didn't know what the hell to do. Felt, you know, very low, like I'd lost my child almost, having done something for 12 years that was your absolute burning passion. Spent the last 10 years running a design agency, but in a kind of a marketing, design, product, brand, ethical kind of way.
What did you leave behind then? Is this a recognisable brand I might remember?
It's Animal.
Animal. I might not only remember, but may have some items in my wardrobe. Yeah. So what happened to the Animal brand then? Because I see it in skate shops still.
Oh, it's still going. It's very big. It's lost most of the credibility it used to have.
And it's not yours anymore.
It's not mine anymore. You know how the sort of cultural change of the big corporate coming in, don't understand it, don't get the culture, the passion's gone, the leadership's kind of not there. Lots and lots and lots of mistakes in lots of areas of the business, and they end up being a very unwieldy big thing that can't go create the stuff that it used to do because it innately knew the marketplace.
Is there a simple issue here? Do people start losing the focus on the passion and start chasing the money, thinking that's the passion?
I think big businesses only work about. I don't think they have any passion, generally. I think very few have. One or two have a figurehead that we'll know and recognise. But beyond that, many, many businesses just lack that. They do. You know, if I was to stand up and do a talk, it would be about passion in business because I think it's one of the most important things.
Give me a paragraph on passion. I know, not much time to prepare a talk, but 8 seconds. How important is this? Oh, we're getting called into the tent.
I think it came from being a kid. I was passionate about doing things that stirred adrenaline and fear, and I was used to those things, and when I started running a business it felt natural to have those things going on every day, and exciting to have those things going on every day, and I just took it for granted. And when I left that business, the business couldn't take it for granted anymore. So in a nutshell, it kind of lost its purpose a bit. What I'm hoping to find is those really good little bits of inspiration and ways of doing things, communicating with people, it's a bit about charging the batteries, but it's also definitely about picking things up and putting them away and then pulling them out at some point in the future.
And they do, don't they? They sit there. They lie dormant and then something triggers it. I get inoculated here. And it's not until I really need that inoculation does it actually save me in a situation or inspire me to do something good. And it's all about doing, isn't it? And now we're entering the tent where it's nice and cosy. I don't know what that's all about. Is that us walking in?
Who knows?
And I'm standing next to
Catherine Powell from the London Meditation Project.
And you did a talk today, and you also, very early this morning, did a meditation session in the lodge here.
For the early birds. I think it's just an invitation to come home to yourself, to let the rest of it go, the busyness, and to just find out what's there underneath.
Funny you should say that, because I felt a little bit like if you picture a jumper board of chaos in my mind and someone was just flicking everything to off for a moment and then just turning on a couple of switches that were needed. Okay, you're going to need your breathing, you're going to need your heartbeat. And it was like a datum in a way.
I think the thing with meditation is that people do think it is all just about switching off and emptying your mind. And that's a little bit of a misunderstanding. It's more about you drop down into yourself in such a way that you become bigger. The things that would have stressed you out before perhaps don't so much because you're grounded. Mindfulness also means that you don't necessarily have to slow down your life and be less busy, but you're more clear and your priorities are clearer. So busyness becomes a bit less enjoyable if it's the kind of busyness that is fractured and hectic, but you can be organised and do stuff.
Some people like to be busy though, don't they? Whether it's because they've got noisy minds and being busy is the only way they know to focus. You know, when someone says, oh, you're really driven, I never think of myself as a driven person. Preoccupied, maybe.
What I was talking about in my talk with working with combat veterans, I talked with one of the veterans from the Falklands War who lost his leg in the war about anger and forgiveness. And he said, oh yeah, anger's a great driver for it, really is a force. But he said, it kept me awake all night. And now my driver in life is towards beauty and towards transformation. And he really is quite extraordinary. He can say he feels that he's becoming a more beautiful person and that now he craves that transformation more than anything else. It's amazing to hear how people's sense of desire for life, that quality of drive, just changes. Well, he's been on a long journey and he's done a lot of reflection and a lot of fighting for justice for his case. But for many veterans, there's an anger at injustice that they may be working through. It might be towards our government, it might be towards the situation that they were working in. And to let go of anger seems almost like, would I then be letting go of my fight for justice? But meditation will suggest to us that we can find clarity of mind and still speak the truth and still call for justice, but we don't have to keep punishing ourselves by continually experiencing and re-experiencing that pain and anger. There's a choice to transform that anger into clarity and then to tell the truth and to move on in your life, knowing what you know. You know, no one ever leaves behind their life experience, but meditation helps us transform the relationship with that experience.
If people want to know more about your work and how you're helping combat veterans overcome all kinds of issues they must be going through, where can they go to learn more?
They can contact us via our website, which is londonmeditationproject.org/veterans. Just email info@londonmeditationproject.org or give us a call on the phone, which is 0208 980-9289. Leave a message and we will call you back.
Can you give people listening to this 20 seconds of peace and tranquility?
Oh, wherever you are, just find yourself balanced on the ground, whether you're standing or sitting down. Just feel the ground under you. Feel your connection to the earth. Notice the sounds around you. And just take a few slightly deeper breaths and bring your awareness into yourself. Stay there for a few breaths, aware of your body. And then when you're ready, open your eyes again, come back out into the world.